You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the Record Celtic podcast. I'm Liam Bryce and today I'm joined by Michael Gannon to discuss all the latest from Parkhead. On today's episode we react to Celtic's Premier Sports Cup victory over Hearts and welcome a special guest ahead of Wednesday's Europa League playoff against AZ Alkmaar. Michael's spoken exclusively to Mikkel Duisberg, ex-Dunfermline and Motherwell defender. But he's also been chief scout and a coach at AZ and he now works for Ajax. But Michael, first of all, we'll have a word about Sunday. Another victory for Celtic. Yet more goals flying in at the right end. So what was your take? What was your verdict? 3-2 win over Hearts. How did you see it?
I don't think I've ever seen a match that has a less reflective scoreline in my entire life. If you say to someone that finished 3-2, you think a kind of close run, five goal thriller. Mm-hmm. But it could have been anything really. I mean, that especially in the first half. I mean the stats that were coming out at half time were incredible. Kind of shots at goal, possession. I think it was 21 shots in goal, 5% possession in the first half, and it was only 2-0. It was two going on about 12, I think. Mm-hmm. It was a really comprehensive win. I mean, the Hearts goals put a different kind of slant on it, but it was a really emphatic victory. I think at the end, Celtic might have run out of steam a little bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe understandably, because I've been playing at full pelt. That's was at four games. 16 goals in four games, I think I'd make that. I'm starting to lose count.
Right.
And could have been a lot more, but it's starting to come together. I think Sunday's game, the Hearts game, was quite a good one for Celtic. But I think it kept the momentum going, a lot of positives. The attacking play was sensational. But it's another reminder that there's work to be done defensively. I think there's still a bit of fragility there and a bit of vulnerability that has to be ironed out. So I think it was a good result in both sides for Celtic. It's a lot of reminder, they've not cracked it yet.
Yeah,
they're still going in the right direction. They'll keep that confidence and momentum and get into Thursday's game against Alkmaar.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, as you say, you know, there's still work to be done. But obviously, considering where Celtic were a fortnight ago, the kind of doom and gloom at Tynecastle compared to where they are now, it's incredible how quickly the mood can change, isn't it?
Yeah, people have bought into it, haven't they? I think the fans have kind of, I can see what they're trying to do, what Ange Postecoglou is trying to achieve, and they've really bought into it because I think at the moment they've been entertained.
Mm-hmm.
I think tougher tests are ahead, including this one against AZ in particular. But the punters are loving it. They're loving the kind of the swashbuckling style that he seems to be employing. It's high paced. It's good football. It's the ball's in the deck. I think the arrival of Kyogo Furuhashi has really kind of ignited everyone at the club. He seems to be a really infectious character that's rubbing off on everyone. So I think the fans are on board. Listen, that only lasts as long as the results keep coming. That's always the way in football, and Celtic no different. But I think as of the last fortnight, the punters have lapped it up because it has been pretty impressive, and it's been good fun to watch. And that's the thing; they're not scratching results. And a lot of times when a club's rebuilding, you have to be kind of pragmatic, and you maybe scratch a few results and try and get some momentum that way.
Yeah,
not been like that at Celtic. They've seemed to have kind of gone in all guns blazing.
Mm-hmm.
Hope that it clicked, and it has clicked in the last week or so. I need to maintain it, but it's let's say that the fans are on board. Now it's up to the side to maintain what they're doing.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, they've kind of turned it, or at least starting to turn it around. Ange Postecoglou, he's looking for more signings, but as he, you know, the team at the moment is still sort of largely made up of you know, guys who were in and around it last season. So what's been the key change? That's, is it the manager? Is it what he's instilled in the players? Or is it something else?
I think it's a combination of all of the above. I think the formation that he's got them playing in is something that maybe suits a lot of guys better. I think you look at Ryan Christie coming back into form, Tom Rogic, who, listen, a year ago we thought he was on his way to Qatar, into kind of semi-retirement status in Qatar. He's come back this last few weeks with a bang. It seems to be that these guys are enjoying the kind of. I'm not going to say the freedom, because it's not sending players out and saying just do what you like, because there's a structure there. But I think it maybe suits guys better. I think last year, I think Celtic got a bit bogged down in formations as well. And I was never convinced of the 4-4-2 diamond that it was used a lot of times last season. I think it lost a lot in terms of getting the two up front. I can understand why Celtic played two up front last year, but too often it was Edouard and Christie, or Edouard or Ayeti was a kit about. Occasionally Griffiths, sometimes Forrest played up there. It was never really convincing as a two. I mean, I think the midfield diamond didn't really work. I don't think it the best out of David Turnbull. I don't think it the best out of Ryan Christie. I don't think it the best out of Callum McGregor. Whereas I think this kind of 4-3-3 with interchanging fullbacks and underlapping and all this kind of stuff, I think it has given Turnbull, Christie, Rogic a bit of freedom. Mm-hmm. Furuhashi, I say, looks like a superstar in progress. His movement is sensational. I think him and Edouard up top would be quite formidable, because they can rotate and interchange. I think that would be. I don't think they'll get a chance to do it for very often. Unfortunately, I think Edouard's future still in serious doubt. I think it does. It frees these guys up to play in a more attack minded way that they maybe didn't get last year. Listen, it's high risk. I still think it's a high risk way of playing. Mm-hmm. I still think that there will be times when Celtic might end up in the end of a dull one or two, especially against the better teams. Yeah. Because of the way they play. I think they'll clatter teams left, right, and centre in the meantime, but they could end up on the end of a sore one as well. But that's pretty much a modern way of playing, isn't it? You look at like even Jurgen Klopp sides, Pep Guardiola teams that play that way can. End up in the end of a sore one now and again.
A battering now and again.
Yeah. Brendan Rodgers teams as well. These are the modern kind of coaches. They do seem to be that when it does go wrong, it can be very risky. I don't think Celtic are high risk, but it's definitely entertaining. That's for sure.
Well, does it concern you at all that they still did ship two goals against Hearts on Sunday, or was it just? You know, you said earlier on it wasn't a fair reflection on how the game actually panned out.
No, I think there were instances that probably could have been avoided. Mm-hmm. I think that wins a penalty kick can happen. I think there were maybe concentration issues, the goals, more than anything else. I think they switched off for a second. I've got a degree of sympathy. Listen, I know some fans are thinking that they haven't been that impressed with Kyle Starfelt so far, and he's had a couple of dodgy moments. I think you've got to give the guy a bit of a break. He's thrown right in at the deep end. Very little kind of base or training behind him at the club, and he's played games. All he's done is played games, really. Mm-hmm. There's been a couple of little slip-ups. I don't think it obviously wasn't great for the second goal. But I think you've got to cut him a bit of slack. I mean, the guy's just been launched right into the team. I think he'll improve as time goes on, because he's learning on the job. I mean, the new signings have all been thrown in straight away. In an ideal world, that wouldn't be the case. They'd be kind of gradually weaved into the side. But he probably has not had that option. He's had to launch them straight in.
Yep.
Guys like Furuhashi have accepted that challenge and really hit the ground running. Yep. Starfelt, not quite yet hit the ground running, but it might be that when the heat's on, the concentration level might be improved as well.
Yeah,
he's played games against teams that Celtic we expect to beat in the last kind of few weeks. But maybe when the heat is on, the Alkmaars and the Old Firm game coming up as well, that might focus the tension a lot more as well. So you may not get those kind of little slip-ups because you can't afford those ones. Whereas when you're 3-1 up and potentially should have been 6-1 or 7-1 up, you can switch off a wee bit. So I wouldn't be jumping down in panic over that one just yet. But I still think the defence does need to look at.
I think you could argue that as far as bedding in periods go, there's less leeway given to defenders than there is attackers looking for goals at the other end, whereas defenders generally find themselves on a bit more, they end up a bit more scrutiny if it's kind of errors because they tend to be a bit more high profile. As you say, he probably just needs a bit of, he can only be judged, when he's had a bit more time to bed in. Well, now, as promised, I'm going to hand over to Michael as he speaks exclusively to Mikael Duisberg ahead of Celtic's Europa League qualifier against AZ. Mikael is obviously former Dunfermline and Motherwell defender, but he's also been chief scout and coach at AZ, and he now works for Ajax.
Obviously, a lot of fans in Scotland know you from your time at Motherwell, Dunfermline, but obviously in Holland, you're now a coordinator with Ajax, a scout coordinator?
Yeah, coordinator scouting of Ajax, first team, reserve team, and together with our head of scouting, Henk Veldmaten, and Mark Overmars, and Gerry Hamstra, he joined us on a couple of months ago from Heerenveen as the technical manager for the academy and the reserve team. Yeah, we run the first team, more or less. Obviously, Mark is the technical director, the technical manager. He's obviously responsible for everything. But on scouting part, together with Henk, we're responsible for the first team.
Well, I thought we would maybe obviously talk about your career a bit more in depth a bit later on. But Michael, I think the best place for us to start maybe is Celtic's result on Thursday night in the Europa League third round qualifying. A really big win for Ange Postecoglou.
Yeah, it was a thoroughly professional performance after the first leg, 4-2 victory in the Czech Republic, and they got the job done in pretty straightforward fashion. And it now sets up next week nicely against AZ Alkmaar. Obviously, Mikael knows very, very well. It's an intriguing tie. It looks like a very, very tough tie for Celtic. They couldn't really get a much tougher test at that stage, I think, than Alkmaar. But I'm sure Mikael will fill us in and tell us just how tough it will be. But look a very tough side. Difficult draw for Celtic. They're starting to play well just now. They've clicked into gear in recent weeks. There's still a long way to go before I think they're back up to speed properly. But they're showing signs of life. 13 goals in a week is a very positive 7 days. So they're in good fettle going into this week. But like I say, it'll be a tough old test, as I'm sure Mikael will tell us.
I think so, yeah.
What can I ask, Mikael? Obviously, we know them through the years. They've been a solid side in Holland, but in recent times they've finished second and third in the Eredivisie. They seem to have really raised a level in recent times. Is that the case?
Correct. When COVID starts, they were equal with Ajax on the number one spot, but on goal difference, Ajax finished as number one, not as champion, because they didn't. The Dutch FA didn't pronounce a champion, but the number one and two. And AZ challenged it a little bit in court, or trying to get in court about, because we beat Ajax twice in the league, that's why on that ground we should be number one. And obviously, I was not happy with it because I'm working at Ajax now. But I can understand a little bit why, because qualifying for Champions League straight away is €40 million. And otherwise they need to go to the playoff, obviously against Celtic now, to qualify for the group stage of Europa League. Will gain more money instead of the Conference League. So money wise, I can I could understand their decision, but at the end, everybody knew it's goal difference. So yeah, even if you beat us 10 times, but if you're not number one on goal difference, you're not. But they're a very strong side. Although they sold over the last week and a half, three very important players, and I will think that they will sell one or two in the coming weeks as well.
Well, I was going to say there that the team from last year that finished third in the league got to the last 32 in the Europa League also, but they seem to have sold their main striker, Myron Bodu. Obviously a lot of money involved as well, gone to France, hasn't he? How big a blow will it be to lose these guys that seem to be their star players?
yeah, these are the boys, and still with Dan Koopmeiners, who is still at the club as the captain, left-footed midfielder, who can play as a centre-back as well. Owen Wijndal, 99, Teun is 98, born. These boys are at AZ from 10, 11, 12 years old. So they know the club in and out. And now they're at the point, yeah, they played 1 or 2 years in first team, done really well, and now they sold for quite some good fees. Yeah, they will miss the automatisms. They will miss the feeling, the spirit. These boys know what it is to play for AZ. Although the replacements, if you're looking at Carlson, who both came in from Sweden last year, was also quite quick and pacey. Hakon Evjen, they already have at the club a year and a half as well from Norway. Youth international players. Carlson is already made to the national team of Sweden, the 18. So they got quite good replacements already lined up. Which they always do, because that's part of the philosophy of AZ as well. So they will miss these players, but on the other hand, if you see the results, you know, they beat Torino, they have some excellent preseason results as well. I saw quite a few of the games, and then you can't even notice that they are weakened by selling these players.
Well, I was going to say, the model has been so successful that they bring young players through and play them for a few seasons and sell them for a lot of money. Yep. I think Stings and Bodo were €40 million. So they're two moves to France. But like you say, they beat Real Sociedad, they've beaten Torino. They've not really taken a backward step despite these sales, have they? How do you see, I mean, I don't know much you see of Celtic these days, but how do you see the matchup next week?
It's very interesting. I probably going to visit the home match on the 26th, I think it is. I think it's going to be a tight game, though, because I know, obviously, I know the atmosphere. And is there already a lot of people, a lot of crowd in the stadiums?
Yeah, the Jablonec tie in Glasgow was the first time with a full house back at Celtic. So they're now back to full capacity. So it'll be a 60,000 sellout in Glasgow.
I wondered as well once with Motherwell, so it's not too 0-1 at midweek. No, but the atmosphere at Parkhead is far beyond, and that will help them definitely. You know, the I think it's one of the best stadiums I've ever played in, sold house. That's going to help them. So that's why it's very interesting that there are crowd in the stadiums, but. It's going to be a tight game. You know, the pace and the power and the passion of the Scottish football. I think that the technical side and then the passing game of the Dutch ones is also known. They want to play very offensive, AZ. They want to give high pressure. I don't think they will adapt too much to the opponents. They will never do. They even don't do it in the arena in Amsterdam. They're just trying to play their own game with high fullbacks high up, put pressure on the build-up and yeah, I'm looking forward to the game. So, can they outplay the pressure of Celtic? Can they stand the atmosphere? It's going to be nice to watch.
Mikael, just for any obviously Celtic fans listening, we've talked a little bit about the atmosphere at Celtic Park, but obviously you're a former AZ player as well. What's the atmosphere like in AZ Stadium? I know it's not as big as Celtic Park, but.
No, they increased the capacity. I don't know if you know about the roof falling down last year.
Yeah,
that's
collapsed by the storm. So lucky enough, no people inside. They renewed the whole stadium now. There's a new roof. They closed the corners. I think the capacity increased from 17.4 until 19. I think it is 19 or 20 now. I don't think it will be sold out. I don't think it's allowed. We start the league this weekend and 2/3 of the total capacity is allowed. So there won't be a sold out stadium. It's an okay stadium. It's totally not comparable with a sold out Ajax Arena, a sold out PSV stadium or a sold out Feyenoord stadium because they got so much more capacity. But also noise wise, it's no way near Parkhead or Ibrox.
When I was looking at little clips on YouTube and what have you, it reminded me a little bit of maybe like a Tyne Castle or an Easter Road,
yeah.
Quite tight and,
yeah.
You know, maybe not the loudest, but it doesn't look like it'd be the easiest place for Celtic to go.
No, but behind one of the goal are the diehard supporters. They make quite some noise, but on the rest of the stand, it's It's okay. It's again, you know, I played in a full Parkhead, in a full Ibrox, and it's nowhere near the sound. And Tynecastle Square, this is a bit curved. The stadium, this one, is a bit curved. Mm. But it, yeah, it's similar like Tynecastle. And they're quite okay on the pitch. But it's not, for the Celtic players, it's not something to be really scared of. I wish it was different, but yeah, that's the way it is.
I've got a lot of really talented young players. We see a famous name on the books as well, a famous father.
Son of,
yeah. A name that jumps off the page when you see it. Is it Maxim Hullet is on the books?
Maxime, yeah. I was responsible for bringing him in, more or less, when I was head of youth scouting and head of scouting at AZ back 3-4 years ago.
Is he a big prospect? I mean, obviously, he's a big name to live up to, but he's a defender, am I right in saying he plays in defence?
Left back. Left back. With a lot of pace. He's a big boy. He's moving a bit wild, and he's an okay player. I don't think he will start the game. He's not a starting 11 at the moment. He's still young.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I don't expect him that he's got the same qualities of his dad.
Not many do.
No, correct, because he was top. But I think he will have a nice future ahead.
Who are the guys that Celtic should be wary of? I mean, I know that the fullback, Windahl, is the one who people are looking at. Is it a left back?
He won't be playing.
He won't be playing?
No, he didn't even train one full session from the European Championship. So I think that Pascal Janssen will not be happy with me at the moment, but Celtic obviously sent some scouts as well, some analysts to the game, so they probably know, and they've never seen him in a starting 11 for the last from the European Championship with the national team. I think he's got something with the groin injury, he's not fully recovered, but I think that the best qualities of AZ is their offensive game, and then the offensive midfielder and the strikers. They've got a lot of pace, a lot of movement. They miss out Boadu, who is really fast, but they got Pavlidis now up front, the boy from Greece. They bought him from Willem II, scoring a lot of goals with Willem II as well. So he needs to gel in a little bit more. Now I think he will play with Abu Klal and Efien of Carlson and Efien. No, they didn't play. Carlson did play a lot of games last year, but Efien didn't. He's now coming in. So it's not a game who's already playing 15 games together. A squad, so they still in settling the squad.
Mikel, have you had much of a chance to look at Celtic under Ange Postecoglou?
No. The Scottish market is not our one of the priority markets for Ajax scouting wise. So obviously, I follow the results, and I obviously know the. The end of the season last year was my best friend is Arthur Newman, so I'm a little colored as well in that point of view. So for me, it was a nice season last year, but I think it's good for Scottish football that Rangers is back on more or less close to the level it was before they got relegated and got the problems. And I think that will lift the level in Scotland and. But I haven't seen them play much. No, only the results and nothing game wise. I think
because that's I was going to ask. Obviously, in your current role at Ajax, obviously Scotland, we were fortunate enough to qualify for the Euros for the first time in what feels like a million years. Scotland finally, you know, we've got some promising young players, and I wondered if it was a market that a club like Ajax would look at. Or you know, do any scouting, or but obviously
the national teams. The national teams are there. You know, as soon as the qualifications on the 17 starts, or the under 19s. Normally, the group stages always. That's where we are definitely. So if there should be a talent, then obviously we know we pick him up. So, but that's the professional youth scouting, and we've got the professional scouting. That's from. It's now 2003 upwards. That's our responsibility, and the youth academy, the professional youth scouting, they take everything from 2003 and younger, and they will travel a lot to these tournaments and qualification tournaments.
You're now at the home of total football, but in Scotland it's more like total chaos. But can I actually reflect on your time in Scotland, Mikael? I mean, you're part of a Dutch invasion at the end of the 90s and 2000s. It seemed to be every team had two or three Dutch guys in their squad. What was it like, your experience? How much did you enjoy being in Scotland?
Yeah, I won't tell you it's my second home, but I told you before we started, you know, we visit Glasgow every Christmas for the Christmas night out together with Arthur and the friends we build up over the years. Arthur stayed so much years longer in Scotland. So, and every time, you know, arriving in Scotland and driving to the city centre, it feels like a bit of coming home. Right? So enjoyed our time so much. My son was 9 weeks and my daughter was 2.5 when we moved. So the ice and the velocities and all the slang, that was brilliant after 4 years when we left. And yes, there was quite a big Dutch big Dutch a lot of Dutch players. The second game or the third game of the season we played with Motherwell was at Ibrox, and there were 5 Dutchies on one side. There were 3 at Motherwell.
Yeah.
That was Jantje Michels was the right winger, Robbie Matthij, the right midfielder, and myself was the right back against Arthur Newman, Giovanni van Bronckhorst, and Neil McCann. So that was and we got beat, I think, a few minutes before the end because one of the strikers trying to defend as well. Strikers can't defend. Made a handball. The penalty, Jorg Alberts, he pinged him in, so we got beat 2-1.
Was it a bit of a culture shock for you coming to Scottish football? I mean, it's not quite the same game as you've been used to in kind of Holland and growing up. A little bit more fast and frantic, I'd imagine. What was your first impression?
Yeah, I loved the type of football. I think my best qualities were that I knew exactly what I couldn't do and what I could do. And I needed to fight and work hard and dive into tackles and I was okay on the ball. So the type of play in Scotland suited me very good. I even played a centre half. I'm 1.80 meters, but I was quite explosive. I could quite good timing and jumping. So I loved my battles against the big boys up front and the passing game from behind. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed my time.
It was quite an exciting time in Scotland as well. There was some money going around and the Champions League was at that point coming in as well. And I think Celtic beat Ajax in 2000. I think at that time you might have been at Dunfermline with Jimmy Calderwood, am I right in saying?
I was in the game as well because Rafa van der Vaart was dating my niece in that period.
Wow.
So I picked up the family van der Vaart and I drove them to the hotel in the Celtic. So my uncle was there as well. And so that was the moment when I start catching up with Rafael. And that was that period.
You, Michael, obviously mentioned there that Jimmy Calderwood, he's a bit of a cult figure in Scottish football. What was it like being managed by him?
Yeah, brilliant. I remember he calling me. I had a dispute with my former coach, Billy Davis. Why I was out of the squad, and we played the Rangers at Ibrox, and I was obviously in the stand. And when I walked to the car, my car was parked on the side. I stayed over in the Cooper Suite waiting for Arthur to come in, and we walked out together with Dick Advocaat. Dick Advocaat was my first coach at Haarlem. That was Dick's first professional job. Dick was my coach in the national team in Holland under 18, so I knew Dick quite well. Arthur knew him very well because I think he was, they tell him, is his second father, Dick Advocaat. So we walked into the car and then Dick asked me, he knew my situation because of Arthur, that I was out and had problems with the club. And then he asked me, should I call Jimmy Calderwood? He said, Dunfermline, maybe he can use you. That was in January, February. So, and he did. So Jimmy called me on a Monday or Tuesday and, on the phone, and he says, he talked about the situation. I said, do you think it's okay if you come up to see the game? Then I played with the reserves of Motherwell against, I don't know anymore, and I was horrendous. And I knew that Jimmy was there with Jimmy Nicol. They were in the stand watching me. I was absolutely, and I knew, oh, And after the game, he called me. He says, "Hey, we watched the game." And so I thought he's going to say, "We're not going to do it." And he says, "Do you want to join Dunfermline?" Yeah, brilliant. So that was first division back then. And so I moved after a year and a half. I moved to Dunfermline, who was in a race for promotion. Mm-hmm. And my first game was Falkirk away in the old stadium. That was also, I can't, as the day is yesterday, we drove up with the bus and I asked the guys, where's the stadium? We were next to the stadium. There was, I don't know, yeah, you guys know. So you did the old stand and old. We won the game and eventually we got promoted to Dunfermline because we should have gone into the playoffs, but with Aberdeen and with, I think it was Falkirk.
That's right.
Yeah, it was Falkirk, yeah.
And Falkirk didn't have the stadium.
Yeah.
Which was allowed to play in the Premier League. So there were no playoffs and we got promoted straight away. So then I enjoyed my year and a half again afterwards in the Premier League with Jimmy. And Jimmy was brilliant. Jimmy was brilliant. You know, you come in and you needed to sit down due to your contract. And he wrote it on a small and just and he turned it over and he pushed it forward. And no. And twice back and forth. And it's, okay, shake hands. And I make up the contract. And brilliant. Excellent, absolutely brilliant.
It's funny, we went to pre-season with Aberdeen a few years ago when Jimmy was manager at Aberdeen. We went to Holland, and everywhere you went, Jimmy was mobbed like a celebrity in Holland. Because obviously he spent a lot of his career as a player over there. And everywhere he went, autographs, high fives, he was a big celebrity in Holland. And obviously his Dutch is perfect as well. But it was fun, he was enjoying it. I think he quite enjoyed it as well.
We had pre-season in Holland, in Delden. In Firmland. Jack de Gier was played for us as well. You know, he was there for a couple of months. Jimmy always booked, I think, pre-season in Holland. Yeah. And the last night before the flight was went back to Scotland, we stayed in Amsterdam. So and then the boys were allowed to go out into the city after pre-season, 5 days in Magaluf. And but that was the kind of coach, you know. He the atmosphere in the squad was absolutely brilliant. He created an atmosphere that even the substitute players or even everybody was fired up. You know, the team talks after the game. You need to be on your toes because you knew he's going to ask four or five players, even the Dutchies, because at the end Rob Matthijs was playing there. Marco Ruitenbeek came in, and he asked us as well. Nou, what do you thought about the game? So you need to, over the weekend after the game, you knew I need to think about what went wrong, what went okay, and then that was Jimmy. And during training, it was always 100% and absolutely loved him. I heard, you know, I know that he's not doing so well. I'm in the ex-DAFC groups app with the boys from back then. And they have a lot of contact with Jimmy, and they meet him or they go over him. But I heard that he's not doing really okay. That's a pity to hear.
Yeah, he's a big character in the Scottish game. We all know him well and appreciate him. But obviously we're talking about Celtic in this podcast, and Jimmy's not the most favourite person at Celtic.
No, I know.
We used to joke about his Union Jack pajamas and all that stuff, and he's also his affiliation. But in terms of that, what do you remember playing at Celtic Park in your playing days? Can you remember much about going there? Obviously, yeah. At Millwall, I think Celtic were maybe struggling at the time, weren't they?
I played there as well when Andy Gorham was in goals at Motherwell. So. We didn't have the best.
A big fans' favorite.
No. the goalie said in the bus, "Hey, bus driver, can you park the bus up at the 18-yard box? Can you drop me off at the 18-yard box?" is he shouting? So we obviously at Celtic, you have we jumped off the bus and you need to go. Oh, big rivalry, yeah. Yeah. But it was always, to be honest, I was quite impressed. Obviously, my first year, you played four times against each other. So eventually, when you played it twice a season and a second, you know what to expect. but the first, but it was also the first game at Ibrox and the first game at Parkhead, and absolutely impressive. And if it's Never Walk Alone, or if it's Tina Turner, you're simply the best. And if all the people, you know, and still, you know, if we don't mind, don't forget me wrong, Celtic or Rangers, you know, we don't care about the backgrounds and the rivalry. Why? I love football and I love these kind of clubs. And these songs, with that atmosphere in these stadiums, well, goosebumps. I still have goosebumps. If these teams play big games and I watch it, and absolutely magnificent. And it was back then playing on that pitch, felt me really privileged that I was around my 30s still, that I could play these kind of games.
Sorry, Michael, sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off there. But I was just going to ask, Mikael, I'm trying to work out who at Celtic you would have played against as a defender. So Henrik Larsson, I think, obviously, they come up against. Maybe Mark Viduka as well, players like that. I mean, seems like an obvious question, but Larsson would have stood out, I imagined. But is there any other players that stood out?
Larsson was always known as a friendly, nice guy, and but on the pitch I remember once he kicked me out of the game. I had a scratch, I think, from my hip until my calf, and it was always nice to play against these guys. And the game we won, I was mentioned earlier on, we beat them 1-0 at Parkhead. That was when he was broke. That was the season that he broke his leg. Wow. He was out. So to be honest, when he was injured, yeah, that was Celtic 30%, 40% less than when they had him in the squad. So I felt the luck that I drove away with 3 points once in an official game at Parkhead. I will never forget that atmosphere and in that stadium.
In terms of the current AZ side, I mean, it's a young side. Is there a potential for them to be intimidated by the atmosphere next week?
Yeah. Yeah, because to be honest, they play in Europe every...
Sorry. No, it's a bit of a cliche, I know, but is that a factor next week?
It can be, yeah. Definitely, because they also play with players who are not a regular starter over the last couple of years. The boys who are used to play the last 2 years are known of European football, and they've done really well in Europe as well, with a very young squad, with an unexperienced squad, but... They brought some younger boys in. There's quite some boys coming through the youth, from the youth academy again, within the squad. I think if you ask the I think they have, I think that 60-70% of the total first team squad is homegrown, is from the academy. And these boys are definitely are not used to playing in these kind of circumstances. So that can be an issue.
Yeah, I think the European nights are always a little bit different to the domestic football as well, because there seems to be an extra bit in the atmosphere sometimes, especially at Celtic and Ibrox as well. And the European nights are the ones that fans look forward to the most, I think, and creating that kind of excitement and atmosphere that in theory should help their own team and maybe intimidate the other one, especially if they're young, like you say, they're a young side that might be something they have to deal with on the evening.
Yeah, definitely. So the first game is going to be vital result-wise as well. A little bit of luck for them, I think, that the European away goals is not included anymore.
I think it's fair to say, I don't know what you would think, Michael, but if Celtic go out to AZ Alkmaar, it's a little bit of a disaster. Obviously, they would go into the Conference League, we know that, but it would be a blow to Celtic. When AZ start the season, what is their kind of European aims? We know that obviously Ajax have ambitions historically to do well in Europe, but AZ, obviously a slightly smaller club, are they the same?
I know that their goals every year is to qualify for Europe. That's what they go into as a season goal, you know. And obviously now with the Conference League, yeah, we call it European football, but yeah, if you ask me, I think a little bit about the you got Champions League and you got Europa League, and then the Conference League is a little bit you can go in there, and I don't have the real feel about European football with the Conference League. So And that's what the feeling I have with AZ as well. You know, they have got two games, one opponent, so the playoff games. So they qualified third in the league, done really well. But because of the coefficient points and we don't have two Champions League straightaways, we need to qualify first. And they will be really disappointed, AZ, if they don't go through as well. So if you're looking at the fixture, then you, everybody knows Celtic as a much bigger club history-wise, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're looking at the stats in Europe, don't count AZ out. You know, they can do you really harm if they can play their game, if they can put the ball down and play the passing game and overlap with the fullbacks and a lot of the position changes, and they can hurt Celtic for sure.
I was actually going to ask you, Michael, that going into the AZ, the first leg, an important factor could be if Celtic add to the squad. I mean, between now and then, Ange Postecoglou was asked after the game on Thursday, you know, whether or not intended. He said that they were working behind the scenes, doing everything they could. But I think it's fair to say they still need a couple of recruits.
Oh, still four or five players short. Celtic, I mean, they've got by so far and they've done okay. Some of the new guys have hit the ground running, but they still need four or five kind of first team players in the squad. So yeah, they're a bit short yet. The squad's very light. A couple of injuries could really hamper them as well. So no, I think they do need more. Defence, still question marks about defence. As Mikkel was saying, that AZ will attack them. I think that Celtic will be a little bit worried about that, because Celtic defensively, looked good going forward. Their movement and speed going forward is impressive, but defensively still question marks. Look vulnerable, especially on the break. I mean, Mikkel was saying that they're a pacey side that can hit on the counter as well. So that could be a danger for Celtic next week. I think if AZ do choose to play a certain way, they could hit on the break. Celtic play a high risk kind of play of football, this kind of high press and high risk game, fullbacks attacking, inverting. And so it's poised that could be a thrilling encounter of these matches. It sounds to me that could be a high scoring affair, these two games.
Yeah. I don't think they both will step back from the way of play and the philosophy. You know, maybe 5 yards higher up or drop in a little bit, but nothing more, because that's the way they want to play. That's also within the philosophy and the vision of AZ, is play offensive football with guys from the side, overlapping and inside. Eh? The fullbacks go not only outside, but they also dive inside. It's similar a little bit like how Ajax plays. And then obviously you take a lot of risk, because you play with a lot of space in your back. So if you've got pace up front, then you need to be really careful. So the defenders, they need to be up their toes as well.
Yeah, it sounds like they're a good match. They're very similar in styles at the moment. That sounds pretty similar to the way Celtic are playing just now. It'll be interesting. Yeah, it should be a good tie. I think maybe a lot of goals. Not a great night for us journalists trying to report on it. And a busy, hectic night full of goals, but we'll see. It should be enjoyable.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Before we finish, Mikael, this is incredibly unfair, and I'm going to put you on the spot. I know you've not really seen Celtic, but as a former player in Scotland, as a former AZ player, who would you tip to come out on top?
I would tip AZ.
Yeah?
Yeah, I would tip AZ. Yeah. I haven't seen Celtic so much, but obviously I've been at AZ 4 years as a player and 14 years as a coach, as head of youth scouting, head of scouting, and so the technical director Max is very close to me. As a player, I played with him. As a coach, we were coaching, we were scouting. So I know the club. Arthur Newman is working for AZ as a scout. So he's my best friend. So I've got a lot of affection with AZ. So, but also looking at the professional side, and do I really think that they can? Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I think as you said, Michael, I think goals are plenty will be coming next week. Mikael, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Mikael. That was great. Thank you for entertaining us for so long. It was great.
No problem, Michael.
Hopefully you can get to Scotland soon as well. These restrictions are lifted and you can get back to your night out in Glasgow.
Oh, yeah. Otherwise, we take the bike. We go by boat and take the bike.
We'll do this podcast in person.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
As I say, it's been a pleasure. Michael, thank you very much. And we'll be back next week with another Record Celtic podcast.